Now, I don't know about you, but if you were listening carefully to that gospel reading, are all of you scratching your heads? It's called the most difficult gospel. And I know that many of you have heard our call to come on back and invite your friends, and we're getting back together and re-engaging and renewing and all that, and you're probably thinking, well, I wish if this is the way we're going to have gospel, I hadn't come. But maybe we make it more difficult for some particular reasons. Maybe it's because modern audiences make it hard by believing that you really can serve God and wealth. Or that finances are so baked into our sense of reality that we have a hard time seeing how disparities of wealth are a problem. Or we've forgotten that Jesus' original audience was poor people, desperately poor, the people of the land that take a role in today's story. So I want to invite all of us to encounter this story and the rascal, the dishonest steward within it, from a place that you've inhabited where you or somebody you love has lost everything. I want you to engage this story from your own place of poverty or your struggle with how our systems of economies in this country and across the world still privilege a very few at the expense of the many. When I was a kid, about the only way my mom could get me to eat vegetables was to make them taste like meat. She cooked fresh green beans for hours with a piece of ham or fatback. She cooked cabbage with bacon. She cut up potatoes, carrots, and turnips and baked them in a Pyrex dish with crumbles of hamburger. In the summertime, we would have squash casserole made with piles of cheese and onions, pair it with ham-infused green beans, and call it a meatless dinner without a sense of irony. In the winter, my mom would rinse a family-sized load of collard greens in the washing machine, and then flavor them with bacon grease on the stove and cook them until the liquid at the bottom of the pan was dark and rich. I learned to call this broth pot liquor and to pile cornbread on top of it. Can you feel me? Anybody eating like this? Right? In every case, the once fresh produce lost most of its identifiable vegetable characteristics and assumed the flavor of the stew it was soaking in. These days, this old-fashioned Southern cooking would come under harsh dietary criticism. I raise it because I'm more interested in the metaphor that it communicates. It's pretty hard not to absorb the stew that surrounds us. It's pretty hard not to taste like the environment that shapes us. We reflect the pot we stew in. Literature has taught us for centuries that a violent environment provokes more violence. Experience teaches us every day that positive nurture engenders trust, while neglect gives rise to feelings of betrayal. Fear spawns resentment. Love invites compassion, and space offered to you to tell your story equips you to do the same for somebody else. It's sobering for some of us to realize it, but our children embody the values that they learn from us, from the systems that we inhabit, from the institutions that we manage, from the stew that we soak in. In a similar way, the dishonest manager, so-called, in today's gospel is a clear reflection of the company that he keeps. You see, he and his community are off kilter, wounded, we might say, or what another generation would call sinful. Everybody is a little sick. But what interests me, and I think the narrator most, is that this fellow, who is clearly a rascal in the story, is able to do good. In fact, he saves the day. A quick first century history lesson. The rich man in the story is a hated absentee landlord who lives in a big city, probably Jerusalem, where the economic, legal, and religious systems are centered. Following a common custom, the rich man has hired a manager to oversee his estate, and all of the planting and herding and harvesting is accomplished by peasants, the people of the land. These workers act as tenant farmers or sharecroppers. They pay rent for the acreage that they work, most likely with some percentage of the products that they raise, and they buy with scrip what they need from a company store, which is only too happy to extend them credit and charge them interest for the gesture. It's quite likely that the grandparents of a current worker once owned a little piece of land, but the family lost title to it during an unusually bad harvest. And because each year's produce is never enough to pay the rent and buy what the family needs, the workers, year after year, slip further and further into debt. That's the system on whose stage Jesus walks. This system is in every way stuck in an economic reality which puts the very, very many in a horrible situation and a very, very few being wealthy and fine, they say. And Jesus' audience, the folks who are falling all over themselves to follow him, are those very, very poor. The society the dishonest manager lives in is broken by cynicism and selfishness and greed. Systems designed to level human pride and offer care for the whole have calcified into a world of the haves and the have-nots. The rich and beautiful have commandeered both the supply chain and religion. And quite darkly, they believe that God has ordained the status quo, that a few should have a lot, and that the many should subsist on not nearly enough. The immediate face of this usurious system is the manager, who probably came from the same families who now suffer under his management. He stands between these two worlds, resented by the poor people, and never fully trusted by the landlord. Given that, it's probably more accurate to label this steward a manager of dishonesty, because everything is dishonest. The oppressive system has made the man. He's a stock character. That's how the audience encounters him, the way we would encounter Simon Legree in a melodrama. Right? They know who to boo for and who to yell for and say, hooray! He would be like the good German who played along with the Nazi regime, or the trustee on the prison farm who pits the warden against the inmates for his own good, or, more ominously for us, he's any part of us who goes along to save our own skin. That's the backdrop for today's gospel, but the action has actually begun before its telling. What's got him to this place is debatable, but when we encounter the dishonest manager, he has woken up. You hear that in the gospel if you look at it carefully. At one point, you can't really see it, but there's a pause. He's going along, what can I do, what can I do? And then he says, I know what I can do. That's the moment in which he wakes up. Somehow, he can see the painful truth of the status quo, that the people's debts can't really ever be paid off, that as one who manages, he's as caught as the poor people, and that only the powers that be are benefiting. For the folks who are living with their backs against the wall, for the many to flourish, for himself, he realizes the system must change. So how do you hear this parable if you identify with those debtors? There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought that this man was squandering the rich man's property. You should start going, right? You're already interested. So he summons the manager and he asks for an account of his management. Now you're going, the manager replied, I have been forgiving the debts that the people owe to you. And you go, huh? Big stuff, he says, 50 jugs of olive oil, 20 containers of wheat. And now you're beginning quietly to applaud. Amounts that they would never be able to repay, and I just erased a lot of it. I don't know, boss, but I woke up to something. They can't repay you. You'll never get what you're owed. So what are we doing here, he says. So I guess I just blew it up. And at this point, the audience erupts into cheers of laughter. Why? Because they are stuck in this system. They're starving. They're lost. They're hurt. They're sick. They're wounded. They're women. They're crippled. They're lame. They're blind. And all of a sudden, there's this story that's told to the mouthpiece of this one that they're following, who says the only way for us to live is to blow up the system that every single one of us is caught in, even the wealthy. And the narrator says that the owner commends the dishonest steward. That's the shock. And then he tells us why. He says, this manager is shrewd, which means responsive, awake, honest, transparent, naked, if you will, not hiding anything or any more from anyone. Are you beginning to see? Why this talk of money from the narrator of Luke? Why have this fellow messing with the farmer's loans and appropriating someone else's forgiveness for the poor? There are clues. Debt was used more than once by Jesus as a component of spirit, and he spoke of forgiving sins, you remember, as forgiving debts in the prayer that he taught to his followers. Central to the story today is the fact that this rascally, dishonest manager had no authorization to go around canceling debts or cutting what people owe. This is outrageous behavior. But the Gospel of Luke has been telling us for weeks that Jesus' behavior is outrageous. Like this. It's the Sabbath. Your donkey or your daughter falls into a hole. Is it a sin to save them? What? When you have a dinner party, sit at the lowest place. Now you're talking crazy, Jesus. I'm not going to clean all my plates and set a nice table and sit at the lowest place. Nuh-uh. He says, don't invite your friends or relatives or rich neighbors because they'll just invite you over. Jesus, why do you think I'm having dinner parties? He says, invite the poor and the lame and the blind, those folks who are stuck, locked out, hurt, dying. Welcome sinners and tax collectors and tell them that God has forgiven them. How can that happen? Because sinners and tax collectors might digest that we've been forgiven too. So we can invite people to the party and say, your sins are forgiven. Is it outrageous? Yes, it is. But it's a declaration of the best news there is. We're all in. This table can include everyone. There's food and drink enough for every single person. That lie which says that only the many can be poor so that the few can be rich has been blown up. Go out seeking the least and the lost and the last because we are all lost sometimes. Do you see? Luke has appropriated a popular story about a rogue manager, this rascal, this dishonest fellow, and invites us to apply the image to Jesus and to his followers, because Jesus is the rascal who's turning the world upside down. He's the one who sees the painful truth that if our debts can't really be paid off, then the system itself is not right. He calls it unrighteous. In doing that, he invites us to redefine humanity and God. The world, we know, defines us by what we have and what we don't have. It defines us by the transactions that we're a part of, by position and wealth. But God sees us differently. All of us are sheep who nibble our way into being lost. And God doesn't condemn that. God comes running to find us. So, going back to my image of vegetables stewing in the pot, stewing in bacon grease, is there a healthy broth that we can bathe in, I wonder? What can we do to make ourselves and our community well? I'll tell you a story. Katie Hutchinson writes, "Less than an hour after Bob was murdered, I stood in the emergency room beside his body, overwhelmed by a sense of peace. Because I knew that wherever Bob was now, given how our lives were, it was safer than the place he'd just been. Then I went home to tell my 4-year-old twins, Emma and Sam, that their daddy was dead. I looked into their eyes and knew that I could not allow their lives to become dominated by their father's death. So I promised them and I promised myself that underneath the horror of what had just happened, that we might find a gift. As for the rest of the community, the code of silence began that night. No one called the police. No one spoke out. The murder was devastating, but the silence from so many compounded the devastation. In the end, she writes, I had to leave town. Eventually, after 4 years, a man named Ryan Aldridge was arrested. That same day, she writes, as I was leaving the police station, I spotted him on camera, alone, in the investigation room. The police had left the tape rolling, and I stood and watched him falling apart. And I didn't want to leave him. After his arrest, police officers had showed Ryan a video that I'd made for him, urging him to dig down deep to find the words to say, I did this. And 4 years of silence, grief, and fear fell away as he said those words, as he confessed to the crime. Those words would begin the healing process for both of us. And he then stunned the police by asking to meet me. And so, less than a day after his arrest, I found myself face to face with the man who'd murdered my husband. As he sobbed, it was all I could do not to hold him. Second to the day I gave birth, she said, it was probably the most human moment of my life. I've been able to forgive Ryan because of the immense sympathy I have for his mother. She said, I think I understand her. We haven't met yet, but we write, and I cherish her letters. And she goes on, forgiveness isn't easy. Taking tranquilizers and having someone look after your kids, that would be easier. But I feel compelled to do something with Bob's legacy. I want to tell my story and to help change people's perceptions, and where possible, I want to do this with Ryan, standing by my side. I'll never understand how our universes collided, but they did. And as Bob, my husband, can't make a further contribution to society, then perhaps Ryan and I can. Whether victim or perpetrator, part of being human is rolling up our sleeves and taking an active part in repairing harm. Who of us hasn't been harmed? Who of us doesn't long for forgiveness? Which one of us hasn't been lost sometime? That's what this story invites us to consider and to find our way through. What the so-called dishonest manager discovered is that though he was soaked in a stew of injustice and dishonesty, that that's not the end of the story. It's not the limit of his power. Even he can act in a way to benefit others. Even he can forgive their trespasses. Even he can lessen their burden. Today, even if it's the first time he's ever acted with mercy. And if he can do that, this dishonest rascal, then so can a bunch of rascals like us. Amen.